is to use your network and to just steadily chip away at getting folks in your network to send you talent.
Right. And we've talked about networking. We talk about it in all of our classes, the importance of it not only for recruiting, but for many other sources of information, for support, for lots of reasons. It's just the thing to do in business today. I know you also talk about recruiters and researchers, and I know that,
sure,
having read the book, that it's a much smaller percentage of youth in terms of,
sure,
being successful. But I do think there's a piece about recruiters that they have to be a fit with your organization almost as much as the candidate, don't they?
You bet. And having professional recruiters either in-house at your company or that you contract with is a good way to augment the flow. You know, researchers are just a type of recruiter also. Most leaders take a belt and suspenders approach to doing their own networking, having some recruiters. One other thing that these great leaders told me is they really like offering referral bounties for their employees to refer people in. I just at a tile company, a retailer, not as big as Tractor Supply, but I think these guys have like 10 stores, and they put in place an employee referral program just about a year ago, and their revenue and profits per store and overall have grown significantly, and they hadn't really done anything else different other than they started offering employees like $1,000 referral bonuses for frontline folks, or like $4,000 referral bonuses for referring in store manager types, and they're just a great flow of talent coming in. So
right.
I do like those referral bonuses end up paying for themselves many, many times over. It's actually the greatest return on investment way, we study this, to generate a good source of talent is offering folks on your team the referral bonus.
I think
earlier this year, one of our conference calls was on the subject of networking and how effective that can be. And networking is important for all kinds of things in business, and certainly recruiting is one of them. And it's one of those things that you need to be – everybody in business needs to be continually building your networks and building your contacts. An interesting story that happened just yesterday, I got a call from a headhunter in New York looking for me to join a public company, New York Stock Exchange board, which I don't want to do. But after listening to him, I know of two people who fit the profile nearly perfectly and was able to refer those two on to the headhunter. So, you just never know where these networking things will come from. And the more plugged in you stay, the more likely you are to find people for yourself. And in this case, I may be helping one or two friends of mine.
That's great.
Very fabulous.
In the interest of moving on, let's talk about selection, because we've now got a pool of candidates that we really like. And so among the hundreds that we have out there, how am I going to whittle it down to just the right candidate?
The first interview that you have with candidates is something we call the screening interview. And this is pretty important, actually, because what a lot of companies do and what a lot of managers make the mistake doing is they do a very informal interview or none at all, like on the phone. They just basically take candidates by their resumes and invite them to come in and go around the office and have a whole bunch of interviews and take a whole bunch of your folks' time. And I don't like that. I think instead what a much better approach is to have some point person, either the hiring manager or him or herself, or an HR person or someone doing a screening interview. And a screening interview has a really simple structure to it. It has four pieces. And this usually happens in 30 minutes or less. And the real purpose of it is just to basically get some sense that this person is enough of a fit that they're a good investment of time to bring in and introduce around to everyone else. And the structure of the screening interview is simply to start with what someone's career goals are. And really at this stage of the interview, you're not judging them or you're not grilling them. You're just saying, hey, what are your career goals, or what do you really want? What are you looking for? And, listen for the type of work, the type of environment, the type of boss, the type of geography. Just really listen for what they're trying to accomplish in their career near term. And then if people want to share with you what their longer term career goals are, that's helpful also, because then you can really evaluate whether or not they're a good fit just based on what they want. The second question in the screening interview is, what are your biggest strengths? And give me some examples. And in this one, you really want to hear that the person is good at the things you need them to be good at, but more importantly, that their stories kind of prove the point. The third question is really just, what are you not as good at or not as interested in doing? And so, like, if Joe is hiring a store manager, and what he's looking for is someone who's willing to hire and delegate, and what he's hearing is someone saying, oh, I just like doing all the work, and I like rolling up my sleeves, and I hate delegating, well, then it's pretty clear that's a mismatch. So you just listen for what the areas are where a person's not so strong. And then the fourth question, I think, is really a time saver. Fourth question is, as you say something like, so, Mary, we're not going to do any reference checking calls yet, because you're still working where you're working, but we'd sure be interested in what you think your bosses will say about you. So, you know, let's talk about your last couple of bosses, and what do you think they'll say about you? You know, what will they say your big strengths were or your areas for improvement? And that last question is pretty telling, because if they know you might do some reference calling in the future, which you might, you probably will, and you say, hey, you know, what do you think this boss, in their words, will say were your biggest strengths and your areas for improvement, that's a really telling question, and especially as early as in a screening interview, can help you spot a star or know that it's time to weed somebody out. So that's a screening interview. Try not to, in a screening interview, just talk about any old thing. Don't just talk about sports, and don't just talk about the weather, and don't just talk about vacations, and don't just try to get a gut feel about if you like the person or not. It's what a lot of managers do. It's a mistake. And because I'm here to tell you, the more rare thing is, do they have the talent to do the job? Do they have the right skill, will, bullseye is what we say, the skill and the will to do the job? And that's where you should focus your energy. And heck, you can like a lot of people who are doing a really good job, you know, performing. But so, you know, whether or not you like someone and if the chemistry is there is really not relevant in the first screening step.
Right. And then?
And then you got the really hard thing, which is you've whittled down from your screens to just a very short list of folks you bring in for interviews. And there are a number of interviews. There's too many of them to sort of describe in depth on this call how they all work. But I'll focus you on the top grading interview, or what's informally known as the WHO interview in the WHO book, suggests that for someone in a key role where you're kind of betting your career, I don't care what level of the organization you are, you know what type of role it is. There's, you know, it's a direct report, and it's really important that you get it right. Our recommendation is to sit down for a couple hours and really walk through this person's career together in a chronological order. And here's the tone, Mary, that I think a lot of interviewers get wrong. I think a lot of interviewers are either playing poker, so they're sitting there poker-faced and just sort of blank-faced as they're interviewing someone. You know, ooh, I don't want to give anything away. Or they're too frowny-faced and critical. Ooh, I'm going to really grill you. And that makes the other person feel uncomfortable. We found, and our research suggests, the best tone you can have in an employment type of interview with the employee is to have one described by intense curiosity.
I love
that. Intense curiosity. Yes, intense curiosity is your home base, you know, tone or how you should act in an interview. Hey, Mary, I'm really interested in that. Oh, tell me more. Now, what did you sell? And oh, you sold so much of that stuff. And how did you do that? And who are the customers? And it's asking a lot of questions, and it's intense curiosity, and it's non-judgmental, but it's almost like you're enthusiastic to want to hear more about the person. And that enthusiasm and that intense curiosity makes the person feel comfortable and allows them to open up and really tell you the full story rather than just the glossed interview story. So that's the top grading interview, or the WHO interview, is a walk through their whole life. And then you have your other team members do some other types of interviews, and sure, doing some reference interviews is a pretty good idea also. So you put all that together, and then you have scorecard plus those interviews, and boy, you'll have so much good information and specific information to make better hiring decisions. But just because you've made a decision to hire someone doesn't necessarily get to hire them. That's kind of the next step. But that's the select step in a nutshell, is a series of these interviews where you're really trying to understand a person for who they really are.
Yes, and there is so much detailed information about those interviews in the book. It really is helpful. I wanted to share just a quick story about the reference interview and what a difference it makes to have more than one person interview that person, or more than one group. We were hiring for someone at a previous organization, and the senior leadership group interviewed a group of people, and then the people that they that made it through their screen were going to be interviewed by the people that that would work for this new hire. Mm-hmm. And when the leadership group and the work group got together, it was as though we had interviewed two totally different people.
Mm.
And, you know, the person came into the group that would work for him with all the things he was going to do and how smart he was and this and that and the other. And I don't know what the interview was like for the senior leadership group, but my only question to them was, how in the world did he make the cut after what we heard? So it turned out it was two different people that we were talking to in the same body. So I think
yep.
it does help to talk to people that are going to be peers, that are going to be subordinates, that are going to be, you know, the whole 360 range.
You bet. Yeah, sometimes folks, as in that case you just mentioned, act a lot differently in an upward direction than they do in a downward direction or an outward direction. So, yeah, getting multiple touch points to really try to get the full picture is
exactly.
key. Hey, Mary, I've got actually two ninja tactics for interviewing in the select step. I'm happy to share if you think you have a really advanced audience and if they really want to get great at interviewing.
Can we do it in a few minutes?
Yeah, should we let it rip? They're really short.
Let it rip.
Let it rip.
Okay, here we go. So the first one, it's a question I get asked all the time where people say, oh, now that I'm using your interview method and I'm getting so much information from the person, how do I know how to calibrate and really figure out if some of these accomplishments they're telling me are any good? Like, I don't know how to calibrate. So if you're asking someone to tell you about some accomplishments throughout their career and they tell you something, you can use the three P's, P as in Paul. And the three P's, you don't have to use all the P's, but pick a P and use a P, but this is an advanced tactic for calibrating an answer by an interviewee and figuring out if it means they're worth hiring or not. And the first P is, I love to ask someone how that performance compared to their peer group. So if I had this one salesperson once, he told me he was an Oracle salesperson, so he's a software salesperson, and he told me that he made President's Club. He said, all right, one of my accomplishments, I sold software and I was in the President's Club. And I said, well, that's fantastic. What percent of your peer group made President's Club that year? And he said, oh, it was about 97%. And so I, with a straight face, looked at the guy and I said, so you were in the top 97% of your peer group? And he's like, I guess we all made it that year. So unless how did someone perform relative to their peer group, I think it's really hard to calibrate on how, some story fits in. Another P is versus previous year. So, for retail, that's pretty easy. I like to hear,
right.
So you became store manager, and you had 1.2 million in total revenue for that store. What was the revenue the previous year under someone else? Oh, it was only 800K. Oh, it was only 400K. That's interesting. That person really did well. Or, under me it was 1.2 million. And then you say, well, what was it previous year? And they say, oh, it was 4.6 the previous year. And you say, oh my goodness, what happened? So it's really great to calibrate on previous year performance. And the third P is versus plan. So if someone tells you, we did 1.195 million, and you don't know if that's any darn good, you ask them, well, what was the plan? And this is the kind of thing you can verify with bosses later, but if they tell you the plan was 2 million and they did, one, well, that's not so good. Or if the plan was 300K and they did 2 million, that's pretty impressive. So versus peer group, versus previous year performance, and versus plan are three ninja tactics for really zeroing in on just how good a performance was.
That is great. Thank you so much. Joe, any comments on that?
No, I think we should move on to the cell topic and then open it up for questions.
Okay.
Wonderful. Cell topics, quick.
Seal the deal.
Yes, let's seal it. So the purpose of the cell step is to really, make sure the person says, yes, you put all this energy in, for gosh sake, you've created a scorecard, you've sourced talent, you've interviewed all these people, you've finally found someone who you think will do really well in your company. So the sell step has five checklist items that we just encourage you to keep an eye out for, keep an eye on to make sure that there's no variable waiting here that's going to come back to bite you. So the five are, we call them the five F's of selling, F as in Frank. Or Foxtrot. So the first one's called fit. So we encourage the manager to sell the fit, like, you know, hey, Fred, you know, you've been saying all along you want to, you're looking forward to managing your own store. You've been assistant manager at this other place. You've done well. You've won awards. Well, hey.
Hello. Well, I guess we lost Jeff there. Maybe he'll call back in. Sounds like he was knocked off the line. In the meantime, let me tell one more story, and then let's open it up for some discussion. Jeff was talking about the fit and how important that is. The cultural fit, I think, is extremely important, I know I keep telling stories about things that didn't work out well, but one of the stories that I'll never forget, because it was probably represents my worst hiring decision, is we had been through the process.
I'm back. Sorry.
Okay.
Well,
did you guys eject? Did you eject me? Sorry. Back to Joe's story. Go for it, sir.
Well, I was just telling a story about the something that I did many years ago in hiring an executive, and we had been through the process, and we were pretty sure we wanted to hire this fella. And the final test for us was what we called a Dorothy test, which is my wife's name.
Yes.
And we took the fella and his wife out to dinner. And we're after dinner, Dorothy and I are driving home together. She gives me a shot in the side, and she said, Joe, something's wrong here. And I said, well, what's wrong? She said, well, I don't really quite know, but I just don't feel right about the thing. So I ignored her advice and hired the fella, and it was only a couple of weeks later that I knew I'd made a mistake. And it was one of these things, you know, the more input you get and the more you hear, the more likely you are to make a good decision. And this was probably more of a cultural misfit than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So the more data you can collect, and I think Jeff's whole process here for this top grading interview, if you just follow those steps, you're very likely not going to make much of a mistake.
That's right. And hopefully, it's neat. It's. I think it's the multiple inputs, the Dorothy test. I mean, everything in the kitchen sink. You know, following these steps, it will increase your chances of success from what the average is, which is about 50% hiring success rates in America. 50% of the time, people get it right, and you could get it up to over 90% using this approach. So the closing out on the sell steps here, the fit, family, freedom, fortune, and fun. So closing people on fit is like, hey, you fit here, so come here, work with me. The second one, family, it's basically like you're not allowed to ask people things like, are you planning on starting a family, or my, you look pregnant. You know, like, let's not be crazy here or violate any EEOC rules, but really just checking in on the family thing on, you know, hey, is your family or people important to you, are they supportive of your coming over to my company? And it's helpful to know that. Otherwise, you might have a candidate who wants to join you, but their mentor, their spouse, or their kid, or someone's not comfortable with their making the move. And guess what? You're not going to get them. Freedom's another one. A lot of folks these days really do want to have the freedom to make decisions at work and live by the consequences of their decisions. So emphasizing the freedom they'll experience in the job is good. The fourth one is fortune, which is just it's kind of a play on words or a tongue-in-cheek thing, but, you know, being clear about how much compensation someone can expect. Clarity is really important. People like clarity. You don't have to pay the most in the world, but being clear about what someone might earn will end up making them feel more comfortable about joining you. And then finally, fun. We talked about fun earlier on the call, but figuring out what about the content of the work, not the holiday parties and not the outside stuff, but really like the work itself, the environment itself in your company, the day-to-day stuff. What about it is fun or meaningful or fulfilling, and really emphasizing that. So fit, family, freedom, fortune, and fun should be your checklist as you attempt to close someone and make sure that it's a green light on each of those five factors.
That's great. Jeff, thank you so much. Let's see what questions our listeners have.
No, they need to press.
You can press *7 and then that will unmute you. Questions?
While we're waiting for questions, I just have another little story about a really good hiring story. A fellow was referred to me, this is many years ago, who had really didn't have a background that was commensurate with what we were doing, but I did the person a favor and spent about an hour getting to know this individual and didn't have anything for him at the moment. It wasn't sure we ever would, but, you know, about a year later, something popped up that fit right into this fellow's level of expertise, and he came to work for us and worked for the company for, I don't know, 10 years before he retired and was a tremendous asset for the company. So just doing an exploratory interview, just talking to talent, and sometimes give you a good perspective on what's available, and then later on you're able to take that talent and use it somewhere in the organization.
Absolutely. A good third of the people we've hired in our company, we've had a relationship going similar to the one that you just described, Joe, where, you know, maybe it wasn't good timing a couple years ago, but, you know, you stay in touch with folks, and sure enough, you know, at some point someone's getting itchy and they want to go onto a new challenge, and if you have something that fits them, you know, that's great. I get more nervous when people hire complete strangers, you know, with whom they have no previous relationship, no contact at all, and I get more comfortable when people accumulate, you know, talent and relationships out there and build what we call a virtual bench of talent, and then you can go to that bench and pull people off it, folks that you've built a relationship with over, in some cases, years.
I've got a question.
Yes,
okay.
Please.
Okay, this is Chip Nuttall, and I'm curious if you could speak for a minute or two on rehires, people that you've had a good experience with, didn't burn any bridges on the way out, went to greener pastures and want to come back. What's different about the process, the screening process at that point?
Joe, that's a hard question Chip offers us. Do you have a sense for the rehires?
If people left us on good terms, we generally would leave the door open. If their performance was above average and we had an opening, we would generally take them back. We would never do it twice, though. We got burned several times for people who were using us as sort of a parking lot in between jobs. I think every individual situation is different. You need to look at it in detail. And sometimes people will leave you because they think the greener pasture's on the other side, and they find out they're not, and they come back and they make an even more loyal employee than they were the first time. But that's a real judgmental issue, and it depends on the personalities and a little bit about your organization, too.
Mm-hmm. I have to agree. If it's a motivational thing, so whatever motivated them to leave the first time, hopefully they scratch that itch or something's different that would make you feel comfortable having them back, and then you know, believe that it's time for them to, or that they'll actually stay longer rather than just using your company as like a stepping stone.
I'll tell you another related topic is once somebody decides they want to leave and they have a job offer, don't counteroffer, because it never works. You may get them to stay for a while, but they'll go the next time they get an offer. So best to just let them go, let them see what the other side of the hill looks like, and if they come back, fine. If they don't, fine.
Mm-hmm.
And my experience in that situation is that once they even begin to talk about leaving, mentally they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
Other questions?
Yes.
Between top graded interview and focused interview.
Sure. What's the difference between a top grading interview and a focused interview? So, so a top grading interview is the one where you're spending a couple of hours, and you're going through the person's entire career from the beginning to the present, and the structure, which I didn't mention earlier, but I'll give you a little more content on it since you're interested, is asking, you know, for each job, finding out what someone was hired to do, what they accomplished, what mistakes they made, who they worked with, and what those bosses and peers and subordinates would say about them, and why they left. And then you kind of just link them all together, and you talk through the story of their life. A focused interview, in contrast, just takes a piece of the scorecard, and you spend only about 30 or 40 minutes just focusing on that one piece. So this will make it easier to picture. In an ideal interview day, let's say from 8 a.m. until 10:30, you as the hiring manager are doing a top grading interview, really understanding the person's entire career. And then from 10:30 to 2 o'clock, let's say there's like another interview, and then there's lunch, you know, with some other employees, and then a couple more interviews. So the question then becomes, what do you have your other teammates spend their time talking about? And our suggestion is you take the scorecard, you carve it up into four chunks, and you almost like hand out, you know, the four different chunks to the four different interviewers. So, for example, for a sales role, part of the scorecard might be around generating leads. And so you might have that one focus interview be all about, you know, let's talk about lead generation and how you got in the door, and let's talk about sales. Another part of that same scorecard could be something like around and hiring a team. And so that maybe that second focus interview would be like, hi, I'm Jeff. And, you know, the purpose of this interview is to talk about you as a manager. And let's talk about experiences where you've built teams. And so what it is the focus interview focuses on specific scorecard areas. What's nice then, at the end of that day, you as the hiring manager can loop back the other folks who interviewed the candidates, and you can say, okay, and going around the horn here, you know, what did you learn? What did you learn? What did you learn? What did you learn? And it's nice because those, what your colleagues will learn doesn't really overlap a whole lot, and it all sort of integrates together into a nice big picture of the candidate. So in summary, a top grading interview, 2 to 3 hours, chronological, covers the whole life. Focus interview, only about 30 minutes or so, but really drills down on specific elements of the scorecard.
The data on how to use that is in the book, and it's very well presented, and it gives you a great outline for using it yourself.
And what you want to avoid is a day of interviews where each one of your team members is asking the candidate the same question. Hey, Joe, tell me about your jobs, or tell me about yourself, or you know, it's like unstructured's bad, informal's bad, repetitive interviews drives candidates crazy. Like, oh my gosh, I just was asked the same question last interview. Ideal interview day is thorough, is structured, and then each of the different interviewers has their own swimming lane to focus on.
What other questions do you have?
This is Rob Elliott. I had a question. Can you talk about best practices in terms of when and how to negotiate the compensation package?
You bet. Joe, you want me to take this one, or you want to lead this one?
You can grab it.
All right. So see if this sits well with you, Joe. So compensation discussions, I think, should happen at the beginning and at the end of the interview process. In the screening interview, getting some sense for how much money someone's making is smart, because you don't want to continue them in a process where if their income expectations are really far off from yours. I made this mistake once. I was trying to hire a consultant, and the guy I was talking to is doing great in the screening interview, and I was like really, really thinking this is a great candidate. And as it turns out, at some point in the screening interview, I just asked him, hey, so, you know, what are your income expectations? And he said, well, you know, I'd like to make about what I'm making now. And he told me what it was. And what he was making was about 10 times what our starting salary was for consultants. So unfortunately, although he was my dream candidate, I sure couldn't afford him. So I think early on, as a knockout factor, compensation is helpful for both sides to just be aware of. And then later in the discussion, you know, right around the time when you decide you want to hire someone, you can get, you know, put more of the energy into figuring out, you know, year one, year two, year three compensation, what's it likely to ramp to, and get, you know, just a lot more detail around it. But so I think it's like a barbell at the beginning and at the end of the discussion. But pretty much leave it out in the middle, because I don't think people take jobs or stay in jobs primarily for the money. Usually financial reasons end up ranking out third and fourth. People generally take jobs and keep jobs because, number one, the actual content of the work is enjoyable. Number two is they have a boss or mentor whom they respect. I don't know, you know, what number three is. It's compensation is usually somewhere down lower in the list. Joe, what do you think around compensation discussions?
I just, you know, if you're in the ballpark, you're in the ballpark, and things will work out fine. If compensation is number one on the candidate's issue list, then you got the wrong candidate.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have time for one more question.
Bring us home. Last question.
I guess there's no last question. This is Joe Scarlett. I want to thank you all for joining us. I want to thank Jeff particularly for your time today. It's great to hear from you. Great to hear from you again.
Pleasure.
And, Mary, thanks for everything. And our next call, remember now, is October 10th on the subject of courage. So thanks again, everybody, and we'll see you next month. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.
The moderator has left the conference. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.